All right, we're going to go ahead and get started as folks are still checking in, but want to be mindful of everyone's time. My name is Dr. Tessa Brown. I am the Associate Dean of the Office of Student Equity, and I also am glad to see you all both online and in this space today to join us to welcome Dr. Blackman. Dr. Blackman is a seasoned higher education professional with over 20 years of experience in student success, access, equity across a range of institutions. He currently is the Dean of Students at Kaplan Hills College and oversees a key of different areas, which also includes our outreach, dual enrollment, adult education partnerships, as well as first-year experience programs. In his role, he is passionate about advocacy for first-generation students that are also low-income, as well as working to expand educational opportunity and fostering a sense of belonging for our historical minoritized student populations. So let's welcome him.
All right, thank you everyone. And thanks for those of you who are online. Sorry for the feedback, I'll step away from that mic over there. I appreciate the intro, Dr. Brown. I'm going to continue that a little bit. I always like to share a little bit about myself before I jump in, okay? So, grew up, my father was a Marine, my mom was a nurse, my dad then decided he was gonna leave the Marines and became a police officer. He got shot going to a domestic violence call, okay? So then they offered him $25,000 or a desk job. What do you think he chose? The $25,000. And now, my parents live with me because he doesn't have a pension. He doesn't have those pieces to fall back on, okay? And why do I share this with you? The imposter phenomenon, navigating the burden, it's a dual burden, okay? And I share that story with you all because there were unspoken expectations in my home about what I was going to be, how I was going to do it, and when. Okay? So I always say, how many people expected this voice to come out of this body? Anybody? Yeah, I get some people who are like, yes, you're educated, you're smart, yeah, we expected it. And I'm like, okay. But what you really expected was, hey, yo, what's up? Let's get started. You didn't get that. And when you don't get that, assumptions are made, right? You start making those assumptions. He's not black enough. Is he gay? Is he not? He's too fat. Why is he up there in that blue cardigan? He should have worn something else. But I bring this up because this all came to a head because I never thought about what other people thought about me until I cried on national TV and I lost $1 million. I was on Deal or No Deal. I was ready. They opened the case. It was $1 million. And if you know, the idea is to keep the million up there. They opened the case. The $1 million showed. I looked at my mom and she was like, tears, because the money meant so much to us. And then I went home. Facebook was really popular then. I went home and I had 797 messages of people critiquing my presence on a TV show. I said, what was this about? Too fat, too black, are you gay, are you not? My father is sick, can you donate? You're insensitive. You don't talk black, but I'm very much so black. So it really drove home the idea of how do I exist in these spaces when other people don't see me as I see myself, okay? So with imposters, some of the things that imposters say, and I'm not gonna go over this whole list, but let's say you got an A in that class. You then say, I just got lucky. I got lucky. The instructor likes me. The professor's cool, that's why I got an A. But you don't talk about how you studied 3 weeks prior. Maybe you even crammed the night before, but you still put in the effort, okay? I don't belong here. I had so many nights and conversations about how I didn't belong in so many spaces. I went to UC Riverside and got my bachelor's in sociology. My dad said, you're gonna go into law enforcement. So I started working at Riverside County Juvenile Probation. They said, before we give you a taser and pepper spray, we have to use it on you. And I said, well, can I lay down first? And they said, who asked can you lay down first? And I said, well, if you're about to tase me, you're about to pepper spray me, I need to get ready. And what did they do? They tased me. I fell down. They pepper sprayed me. And then I said, this job is not for me. But he told me that you're going into law enforcement. So what did I do? I stayed there for an additional 8 months, unhappy, miserable, because I didn't know if I could do anything else. That's what I knew. And so I was just in the right place at the right time. I got that job because my dad knew those people. I felt like I needed to be there. And some of the messages that we tell ourselves, right? So understanding the imposter phenomenon. Most of you probably heard of the imposter syndrome. How many of you heard of the imposter syndrome? Okay, I don't say imposter syndrome because syndrome, we think that it's something we can cure. What medication can I take? What do I need to do to get over it? Imposter phenomenon touches on the experiences that we have as people and the novelty of it. I talk all the time. I do presentations all the time. Public speaking is what I do. I was nervous meeting you all today. And that's the phenomenon. The phenomenon is you go through this cycle and it's about how we manage it, okay? So the definition is an intense feeling of intellectual authenticity that is frequently experienced by high-achieving individuals. Those last three words, high-achieving individuals. You're in this space because you are high-achieving individuals. And the times that we question ourselves and how we show up, why? Why do we do that, right? And prevalence, right? So approximately 70% of individuals experience imposter feelings. And it really cuts across demographics and professions. So I'm gonna share with you that while today I'm focusing on African-American men, historically minoritized groups, underrepresented groups, normally fall in line with the imposter phenomenon. So if you are not a cisgendered white male, heterosexual, Christian, you may experience the imposter phenomenon. And let me be clear, I'm not taking away from the cisgendered heterosexual white men who are Christian. They may experience the imposter phenomenon, but in their way, okay? So the impact, this phenomenon impacts mental well-being, okay? And so how we show up. It can also affect career progression and overall life satisfaction. So after I got my bachelor's and I did social work, I thought to myself, where was I my happiest? And it was when I was in education. So I went back to school and got my master's at the University of San Diego. And while I was there, I realized I was happy in education and I wanted to be in this space. And it meant so much to me to be able to come back and work with students that weren't leaving every 3 months. I share that because when I was in Riverside County Juvenile Probation, a client, that's what we call them, would come in for 3 months. They would have a court hearing. Sometimes they would go to juvenile hall facility or they would go back, but I wouldn't see them again. I wasn't affecting change. I was there, I was holding space for me. So how does the imposter phenomenon show up? It's a brutal cycle of apprehension and short-term relief, okay? And so I'm going to go over what that cycle looks like, but when I say a brutal cycle of apprehension, it's being unsure. Being unsure of how you fit in this space, how you all are seeing me in this space, and how I show up. Fear failure. So many of us are analysis paralysis. I think about it, but I'm not gonna do it. I got a call, I was 27. My mentor said, I want you to apply for this assistant dean role at the University of California, San Diego. I said, I can't do it, I'm not ready. She said, you got this, you should do it, you should apply. I said, no, I'm a program coordinator, I'm good, I don't wanna be in that role. I'm not ready, but it was fear. I was fear of failing, right? Then let me just be very clear. I looked at who they hired. I said, I could have did that job. I could have did that job. Why they hired? And then I was like, well, I didn't apply because I was scared, okay? An incessant need to be perfect. That's one of those things where we operate and we move in a way where we are like, I have to show up and I have to be at a 10. And let me be clear, I say this because as people of color, our skill set have to show up before we do. I don't have the luxury of walking into a room and saying, hi, everybody, I'm amazing, I'm smart, and I'm here. They don't care about that. My resume says, this is what I am, this is what I do. And I have to prove that before I walk into the space, because as soon as this black man walks into the space, it negates everything that they've seen on paper, okay? A conscientiousness, right? And reluctance to adopt positive feedback and criticism. How many folks in here, when you hear positive feedback, do you take it or do you negate it? How many of those take it? Hear the feedback and take it. Okay, I see 2-3 hands. 4 hands. Okay, sometimes it's hit or miss. My sister walks in and she's like, oh my gosh, are you losing weight? And I'm like, you think I'm skinny? I love it. But then somebody else comes and they say, oh my gosh, really, you're amazing. That workshop was great. And I'm like, you know, I could have done better. It just really depends on where we are. So it's very fluid, okay? Fear of success and achievement, that goes back up to fear of failure, and then a lack of self-confidence. So why did I feel the need to identify the phenomenon, okay? It really exerts overall stress to have to navigate and operate in this space. Physical and emotional manifestations, right? Heart palpitations, maybe your eyes are watering, maybe you're starting getting shaky in certain spaces because you don't know if you belong or you fit in, you don't know what is happening to you. Okay, relationship problems. Why do you think relationships problems can stem from experiencing the imposter phenomenon? I'm gonna be asking questions, so I'll wait for you to throw it out. Yeah.
Maybe taking your experiences out on your spouse? Or?
Yeah, so what I heard was maybe taking your experience out on your spouse. Yes, that could be one of them. What else?
Insecurities.
So both, right? So if you're not able to show up authentically you and be who you want to be in the space, can you imagine how that shows up and pits us against one another? Let me be very clear. I could have a horrible day at work. And I say to my boss, yeah, this is great. Thank you. You're amazing. This is awesome. Then I get home. And then my mom says, how was your day? And I say, I can't stand those people. This is what happened. But I didn't say that to my boss. Or maybe I had a horrible day, traffic on the road. But when I go home, those are the people that we are closest to, that we are allow ourselves to be vulnerable with, that get that feedback. They get us lashing out, okay? Absence of personal and professional gratification. And unreached potential, because again, that analysis paralysis. So characteristics of the imposter phenomenon, self-doubt, doubting yourself, a sense of incompetence, right? I don't know what I'm doing, why am I here? Before I started chatting and public speaking and doing workshops, I would be in a space and I would be talking and then you would see my cheeks start to twitch. Because I don't know if I should smile or should I just be present? And everybody's like, what's happening? But what's happening was that emotional contagion, right? And I say emotional contagion because if I was nervous up here, you all would be nervous for me. That's emotional contagion. We've all seen it. The people who come up and they're like, my name is, and you're like, don't look, don't make eye contact. They will be done soon. We all see it, okay? And so it was that incompetence. I didn't feel adequate, okay? So frequently comparing yourself to others. Well, they got the job. They got an A. Why didn't I get an A? So my first year at UC Riverside, I got the first D I've ever received in my life. And I said, oh my gosh, I can't believe I got a D. And they did something back then that they don't do now, but they would put us all in a room and say, look to your left, look to your right, one of you won't be here next quarter. And I was so shocked. Now that's against FERPA. They can't do that now. They shouldn't have did it then, but they did it. And so we would look to the left, we would look to the right, and you know what I found out? The person to my left told me they got an A. The person to my right said they got a B. But I know everybody here is on academic probation. They were lying. I was sitting in my truth and saying that I got a D and I'm on academic probation and I feel fraudulent. I don't feel like I belong here. They're gonna kick me out. What if my parents know? What did you get? A. What did you get? B plus. And I show up and they're all in the same space with me. And so that's where frequently comparing yourself to others, we need to let that go. Because 9 times out of 10, they're giving you a show and they're not showing you their behind the scenes. And that's exactly with social media as well, right? I have friends in social media right now. I'm so happy. We're married. This is great. I have kids. Back in, divorced, bankrupt. But I know that, but the people don't know that. So we have to be cognizant of that. Guilt about success. Let me share something. There's something called survivor's guilt. And when people hear survivor's guilt, they think, I was in a car accident and someone passed, but I survived. That's one version of it. Survivor's guilt is, I grew up in a home that was 2-bedroom, 2-bath, no AC, in the desert, 122. And when it got cold in the winter, we would light the stove. But now I'm in my master's program sitting at the University of San Diego in this cush residence hall room while my parents are still there. That's survivor guilt. Here I am thriving, existing, surviving, wishing I could share this experience with them, but they're not students. And so I share that with you because as you progress in your professional careers and you start to move forward, you may start feeling some of those feelings of inadequacy as well as survivor guilt, okay? And guilt about your own success. Fear and anxiety, immobility, skewed definition of intelligence. Well, they're smart because they had a tutor. They did this. They got an A because, they don't have to work 40 hours a week. That's not true. Code switching, which we're going to get into. Can someone share with me what code switching is? We have a mic in the back, so just go ahead and raise your hand if you have an idea of code switching.
Y'all know what I thought you
don't
know.
Thank
you.
Well, I don't know how to put it succinctly, but code switching is not being your authentic self in a professional setting, I guess I would say. Mm-hmm. It's, going from using slang to using, I guess, standard English language. But code switching kind of has a lot of different nuances to it. But it's really kind of wearing a mask mm-hmm. when you're in certain settings to adhere to the settings or what you perceive the settings expect of you.
100%. 100%. And we can take that even further because you talked about language, but we can talk about dress. We can talk about hairstyle. We can talk about our movements and body language and all of the things that we do. They did an event on campus and it was reggaeton. And I was ready to dance. I was ready to get out there. And they started doing this twerking movement. I said, I'm the dean of students. Can I start twerking at work? I don't know if they're ready. I did. They put it on Instagram. And then all the students in the comments were like, yeah, that's the dean. That's what's I said, okay, I feel good. But could you imagine? They would have been like, hey, you know what? That's not what we do here. And I was like, well, I mean, it wasn't a hard twerk, but it was a little something. But we want to be cognizant in how we show up, right? So code switching, that takes an emotional toll, and we're gonna touch on that as well. And then false and non-affirming messages from family, okay? The non-affirming messages from family, I would get a C. I never got a D, I told you I got my first D, but I would get a C. And my dad would say, that's all we expect of you is, did you try? The reality of it is I didn't try, but I would say, yes, I tried. And he would say, that's fine. then you got to see. But the reality of it was, is I did not try. And so he would always tell me, as long as you got to see and it's passing, you did exactly what you're supposed to do. When in actuality, I wasn't trying. And then when I started to try, then they put me in the advanced classes, and I was the only chocolate chip in the cookie. You understand, okay? And I was the only one, the only Black identified student in the space. So imagine Black History Month. Everybody's like, happy Black History Month. Then we would talk about slavery, and they would show that same photo with the lashings across the older gentleman's back, and then people would come up to me and say, I'm so sorry. And I would say, well, should I feel sad? Dang. And I was angry. And then they want to have parent conference. Why is he angry? Well, I'm angry because they keep apologizing that I should be angry, but I don't feel angry, but the picture is sad. So then I had to code switch. So when they would say, hey, we're sorry, I would say, oh my gosh, thank you so much. Because when I was authentic in my response, it was a problem. So explanation for success. When we achieve, when we get an A, we get that job, we get into school of our dreams. Luck or timing, we say it was luck. We say it was just, you know, the universe. Oh, it was easy. I just clicked enter. That's how I got in. I didn't even try. Others help. Okay, you know, well, my sister helped me. My brother helped me. I mean, it was nothing. I got in. If it wasn't for their help, I wouldn't have got in. The computer made an error. Let me say this. When I got my doctorate and I had defended my dissertation, which was on the imposter phenomenon of African-American and Mexican-American students that attend predominantly white institutions, they sent my degree in the mail. But before it came, I said, they made a mistake. They're gonna take it back. I'm not gonna be a doctor. And I was so scared. And I don't know where that came from, but there was this fear that I wasn't going to add up to what they wanted me to be. Likeability. I got the A because, again, the instructor likes me. I got the job because I'm likable, okay? And then any other excuses that you can throw in except for I did this because I showed up. How many of you say, I did this, I got this because I showed up, I killed that? Show hands. Okay, I see some hands, that's all. You know, I walk into a room and I'm like, I did it. Now I say, I did it. Drop the mic, I did it, I killed it. But before I would be like, I don't know how that went, okay? So let's add it up. We are going to have you do an imposter test. And I use the word test because that triggers some folks when they see the word test, okay? It's really an assessment. And it's to help you determine where you fall on the imposter phenomenon scale. There's a scale. So answer the questions of how you are feeling in the moment right now. I'm going to try to stay away from this. Thank you. They're coming. Take one and pass it back. Thank you. Oh, got it. Okay. So again, how you are feeling in the moment. Take some time. We're going to take about 5 minutes.
And for the folks who are zooming in online, if you scroll down, there's a link to the digital version of what we're passing out.
Yes. 5 minutes. Yes. We have about 2 more minutes. Right. If you still need more time, that's fine. For those of you who are done, feel free to start to wrap it up. So I had you answer, how many is it? 20 questions. Now I want you to add them up. And so it's literally just sum it all up, right? If you did a 5-4-1 and a 5-4-2, that's 10. Should we write our names on these? No, you're not going to turn it in. They're for you. Okay. And so feel free to start adding them up, and we'll take a minute to do that. I see some phones coming out, people using fingers, appreciate it. Okay, take your time, but I'm gonna move forward. So, if you got a 40 or less, that means you have few or lower tendency of imposter characteristics. That's pretty good. We all need to strive to be there, okay? 80 or more means that you have intense imposter phenomenon experiences, okay? I'm not gonna ask you to share where you fell in the spectrum because that's for you, but I do this so you can understand where you fall when it comes to the imposter phenomenon, okay? So when I first took this, I was at 88. And again, it's called the phenomenon. So I took it again, 2019, comfortable in my career, everything was going good. I was at a 50. I got a new job. I was like, let me take it again. 92. So it's very fluid, okay? Just when you think that, oh, you know, I got a 40, you know, that everything's going great, this is awesome, but you get a new job, you start new courses, you meet new people. Again, it's the novelty of it. It's new, which is, again, why we call it the phenomenon, okay? So how did you all feel answering some of these questions? I'm not asking you to share what your score was. I'm just saying, how did you feel by answering some of these questions? Comfortable, okay. What made it feel comfortable for you?
I've done questionnaires like this in the past, so.
So familiarity, right? You're familiar with it, you've done it like it in the past, so pretty comfortable, okay? Was there someone who was like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna have to circle a five here and I'm not comfortable with this? Okay, just come in with the mic.
I felt very called out.
Oh, you felt called out. Want to elaborate?
Like something that I didn't originally feel until like I read the question and I actually had to think out on it.
So you had to think about it and then you were like, my gosh, right? That aha, okay? Anybody else? One more, yes.
Standing your truth, it was not graded. You didn't have to turn it in.
Yeah.
But it made you stand in your own truth.
Made you stand in your truth. Thank you for that. And that's why I do it. I want you to stand in your truth. I want you to be present. I want you to have these self-realizations. It's not for us to say, oh my gosh, this group fell at 82. You all fell, no, we don't need that. It's really just for you to be honest with yourself and where you fall here, okay? So let's talk about the cycle. I know this may be hard to see, so I'm going to try my best to use the little laser. The imposter cycle, it starts with a project or a piece of work. Maybe that's, let's say, doing a paint.
55.
Oh, okay, thank you. Project or piece of work right here. Let's say it's writing a 20-page paper. We're just gonna say a 20-page paper. Or interviewing for that job. Anxiety, self-doubt, and worry then comes in. Then as an imposter, we think about it in two ways. We either over-prepare or we procrastinate. Where are my over-preparers?
Okay. So what do we do with
this? Oh, you just hold on, it's for you. I saw 3 or 4 hands, some over-preparers, okay? Our procrastinators. Yes. Y'all are my people. When I tell you, I don't know what writing those little note cards the night before the test was going to do, but it made me feel validated. So the procrastination over preparation, and then there's this accomplishment. You do well, okay? You accomplished it. Then there's this feeling of relief. You've done it. It's over. You got the A, you got the job. Feeling of relief. And then you get some positive feedback. That paper was amazing. You interviewed great. You deserve this role. But we ignore or push away the positive feedback. Okay? But then over here, the over-preparation, We put in a lot of effort, but we ignore and push away the feedback. With procrastination, we attribute it to luck. Y'all, I wasn't ready for that interview, but I Googled the company the night before and I got the job. I was lucky. But the reality of it was, is did you really Google it the night before? You probably did. Got that mission statement, got the vision statement. But what really had you apply initially? Some people would say the salary. Okay, that's great. It was a salary. Outside of the salary, what about the role did you love? So then you need to start peeling back the layers and say, oh my gosh, I got this job because I was the best candidate and I showed up in this space. Okay? And so we attribute it to luck. We ignore and push away positive feedback. Effort, again, we put in all that effort, but we still push it away. And then feeling like a fake, self-doubt, depression, anxiety starts to emerge from here. And then what do you know? We go right back into the cycle again. Has anybody experienced this cycle? I'm seeing some head nods. Anybody want to share? Was there an instance? And don't feel like you have to share. You're just supposed to do the teacher pause. I like to do that. You know, I'm like, I just pause. Okay. So with this, we have the societal stereotypes and biases in academia and professional settings that really contribute significantly to this cycle because they tell me how I'm supposed to show up. Okay. And again, mentor perpetuates feelings of inadequacy, persistent questioning of credentials, and amplifies these feelings. Let me be clear. I walked into a space recently, and you know, this is being recorded, so a space. I walked into the space, and they said, you're the doctor? And I said, yes, I'm Dr. Blackman. You don't look old enough to be here. And then I was like, oh my gosh. They're attributing my knowledge to my age, but I'm here. And then I thought about it when I went home and I was like, they think I look young. So I was happy. But the reality of it was, is would they have said that to somebody who didn't look like me? So I am now being reduced to, again, you look young, so you can't be the doctor. I didn't expect that of you. We have a two school district at my community college, and one is more predominantly white, and one is more black, brown students. I was at an event, and they said, we would think that you would work at that other institution with those people. I can't believe they hired you there. My heart dropped. But then I thought about it, because they said that, that means I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, right? And so I had to challenge that. So the origins of the imposter phenomenon, right? We talked about early family guidance, outlook about success and failure. My dad's like, see, you're great. Now, because he didn't attribute importance to academics. I told you he was a Marine turned police officer, okay? But when I went out for the football team, my dad's like, you made the team. That's awesome. Because if you didn't make the team, there was going to be a problem. So it's where he put those messages. I was like, well, I got an A in English. That's great. What was the football score? Did you take him out at the knee? And I'm like, yes, that's great. And I'm like, oh. It just felt off to me, right? And myths and labels. I have four sisters, okay? I am the only boy of my parents, three older, one younger. And so they would literally sit in a row and braid each other's hair. The oldest had no one to braid her hair. I had no hair. So they would put me in a chair and I was braiding her hair. My dad comes home, what are you doing? Boys don't do that. I was like, okay, so I can't do the hair. No, got it. I talk with my hands. Boys don't talk with their hands. Okay, I can't do that. he would say something to me, I would roll my eyes. Boys, don't do that. You know, I couldn't do nothing. I would eat. I was eating slow. He's like, you eat too slow. Boys don't eat slow. I was like, well, what do boys do? And so that's the myths. That's the labels. Those are the messages that we receive that we then take with us. So I can tell you that you may think I'm extroverted, I'm a talker, I'm out here. I am. However, a lot of that was suppressed for 18 years. Because when you're being constantly micromanaged and scrutinized around what boys don't do, the only thing I could do was sit and look. And even then, don't look too hard. Right? So it was wild. It was wild. And then the novelty of situations. So if it's a new situation, you're going to experience the imposter phenomenon. Judgment to follow an alternative path. So I decided to go into education. I didn't go into being a police officer and in the corrections. There was judgment there. Okay? Responsibility to represent an ascribed identity. And what I mean by that is what we say to our little girls, you're going to make a great mommy one day.
Should we take pictures of that?
It'll be online. Okay. So I'll get it sent over. You don't have to. And responsibility to, again, those ascribed identities. So being a black man, I was always taught by my father that I needed to provide. So when my family's house foreclosed, they moved in with me. So when I was 18, I told my parents I would never come back. Now they came to me and they're in my house. But you know what the beauty about that is? When my dad does something crazy, I say, my house, my rules. He hates it. He hates it. But my house, my rules. And my mom's like, you know what? You're emasculating your father. You should let him feel that he has a say here. Maybe you should, you know, help him feel like this is his home too. I said, okay, I got it. Their wedding anniversary. What do you think I did? And this is petty, but I'm sharing it. What do you think? Wedding anniversary. A party. I went outside and took a picture of the house. Said, happy anniversary. Petty, but very real. Because I told you for 18 years, I was what? Quiet. Now you're in my house. So you get all of this. Okay? And so, again, the ascribed identities. So what are some other identities that I have not mentioned that is just like, oh, well, if you're this, you have to do this? Yeah. If you're tall, you have to play basketball. What else? Yes.
In our family, everybody became nurses.
Everybody became nurses in your family.
I wanted to become a nurse, but I ended up becoming a teacher. But I had an aunt who discouraged me and told me, you don't want to go into that profession. There's no prestige. You don't get paid a lot of money. And I was in a state of shock, because I wanted to become a nurse.
Yep.
So I ended up going into another field that did not work for me very well. But in the long run, I ended up becoming a teacher.
Yeah.
But it really messed up my mind.
It does. It does. It really does. You start to second guess, am I making the right choices? Am I going to be as successful? How can I help move them forward, right? And then, of course, unaccommodating structural cultures, competition and hostility. There was competition with me and my father all the time, okay? And then that drew resentment, that drew hostility, and that surfaces in the imposter phenomenon. And I'm not gonna ask, but I want you to think about how that has surfaced for you. If there is competition in your family, competition in your friend group, think about it. Any hostility, resentment? Okay, so the role of racial dynamics, how's this all linked to being black and being a black man in the space? Lack of representation in leadership, right? Contributes to, look at that, Okay? Feeling out of place in only 3.2% of senior roles are held by Black professionals. 3.2. So feeling inadequate in the space. What I've learned, I can walk into a meeting and my white counterparts will say something and everybody's like, that's amazing, that's awesome. And then I say something and then afterwards they say, were you angry? And I said, you're confusing angry with passion. And they were like, And I'm like, but they can say it and you heard it. But when I do it, I need to be apologetic for it. Let me also share, we all have those behind the scenes warriors. I call them behind the keys warriors. That's when you get that scathing email from someone where you're like, ooh, this person is really getting on my nerves. I'm gonna get them now. So they email you and then you email them back. I will send an email very respectful, very professional, but I'm going to let you know, no. I got feedback. Ooh, that was unlike you. That email had tone. And I said, you gave it tone. And they go, no, I read it. It said, for each question, please circle the number that best indicates. And I said, that's not how I wrote it. I said, for each question, can you please circle? That's not how I read it. And so I expect you to apologize. And I said, but everybody around here can have a moment, but I can't. Because when I have my moment, the big Black man is scary. I'm no longer the happy Negro that is like, oh, we're great. You think I'm amazing. This is awesome. And I'm okay, you're okay, we're okay because I'm smiling. I can't tell you how many times, and I know this happens to women, but as a Black man, when I'm walking into space, people are like, you should smile. Why? To make you feel comfortable? I was in Baskin Robbins. I was with my mom. This older man came up and he was just like, you're out with your, is this your sister? I said, this is my mom. He said, oh, well, you should smile. And I said, And my mom's like, why would you do that? I said, I don't like it when people tell me to smile because he walked into that space and was afraid of this. So if I smile, then we're okay. I'm okay, you're okay, we're okay, okay? And so what happens when we're both okay? We're good, no one's nervous, everything's fine. But when we're not okay, we start to fill the space with words. I do have an activity that I want to do with you all, but I want to be cognizant of time. I may come back to it. The burden of higher performance expectation weighs heavily on those of us who experience the imposter phenomenon because we want to make sure that we're putting our best foot forward. And again, 2/3 of Black professionals feel that they must work harder. And I mentioned this before. Our skill set has to show up before we do. We don't have the luxury of being able to show up in the space. We have to show up with, I've done this, I've achieved this amount of money, I've done this, I've done that, and then perform, be successful at it, then they see us. Okay? And then an increased pressure to success and prove oneself. So, an intersection of race and gender, okay? Unique challenges. It's disproportionate scrutiny at higher expectations in professional educational settings. Let me be clear, and I'm going to say this. I've had young Black male students that have worked for me. And I say, the expectation is that you are here at the start of your shift. 2 p.m., you start at 2. They show up at 2:30. Okay, warning, be here at 2. They show up at 2:30 the next day. Hey, maybe we need to change your schedule. Okay, nope. The next day, they show up at 2:30. Okay, now we're documenting, and now I'm gonna let you go. This is a true story, and this happened. And then I got a phone call that says, oh, but he's a Black youth from the inner city, and so you need to go easy on him. I said, I've given him multiple chances, and you're doing him no favors. And then I became the, he has internalized racism. He hates Black people. Because I want to hold him accountable. He then got a job for Teach for America after he graduated and was fired after 6 months. Guess who he called? Thank you. Oh my gosh, I can't, you were right. I can't believe it. My 4 years at this institution, they just let me do whatever. And then I got out here and now, what should I do? I said, I need you to now start to play the game. It's not meant for us. So we have to play it. And in some cases, we need to control it, okay? But disproportionate scrutiny. So on that end, he wasn't scrutinized at all. But then in other ends, it's, I need all the black students to talk. I need y'all to get good grades. I need you to do all of the things because you have to show up. There's extremes, okay? Stereotypes, especially with our black men around hypermasculinity and aggression. I just told you there's times where in meetings I can get a little feisty because there's passion there. And they automatically go to aggression. You were aggressive. Oh my gosh. Willie, when you yelled, I said, nobody in here has heard me yell. But when you yelled, it just hurt my heart. And I share stories with you all to connect here. So I have a story for this. I was supervising a young lady, full-time staff. She called the person she supervised a minion. She said, I'm gonna get my minion to do it. And I said, that didn't sit well with me. I don't like it. That falls in our harassment and bullying policy. But I'm gonna work with you. I want you to be a better supervisor. So for the next 6 months, I'm going to take over supervision of your team and I'm going to coach you. Do you know she went to HR and said he yelled at me, said I wasn't a good supervisor, and then he gave me this plan that he said I had to follow in order to become a good supervisor, which was going to conferences, one-on-one meetings with myself, and I was coaching her and mentoring her through this. And you know what they said? We think that this is extremely gracious because what we would have done is write you up and documented and put you on a performance improvement plan to get out of here. And I always go back to that situation and think, if I was not a black man and she was not a white woman in this space, would I have been received differently? Something to think about. Pressure, navigating the double consciousness, balancing personal identity with societal expectations. Does anybody know what the double consciousness is? I see a head nod. Do you want to share? Go ahead.
Well, this is my first time hearing of it, but sure. I feel like it's something that I might have been dealing with a lot recently. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like being aware of societal expectations, but also at the same time being aware of you have the right to not be held to those expectations, but still living in a world where you are. So you're kind of battling
self-care
and self-respect.
Yes.
Against also living in the world that you live in.
100%. It's the mental gymnastics of it all. We do it all the time. Double consciousness is existing in one space and having to navigate it over here while still balancing and wanting to honor how you show up authentically over in this space, right? And so it's navigating those double consciousness. And I would always say, I'm about to go in here. It's gonna be mental gymnastics. I'm gonna have to say action before I get started in this meeting because I'm going to perform. And what happened? We're in the meeting. She starts crying. We're going back to the same. She starts crying, tears, everything. This space, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Can I give you a Kleenex? What do you need? How are you feeling? How can I help you? How can I support? But what I wanted to say was get it together. Tears, save them. How do you think he felt when he was degraded in front of a group of folks? That's what I wanted to say. But navigating the double consciousness, being cognizant of societal expectations and how I, as a big black man, that's another factor. She's not just black, big and black, okay? And who society tells you to be afraid of, I have to move in a certain way. And I was always taught I needed to make myself smaller in order to not seem as threatening. So for this meeting that I had it wide open. I had the curtains open. She was sitting where you were. I was sitting up here. I'm like, oh, I hear you. Never once did I get up. I didn't raise my hands above my head because I fear if she's going to say he's aggressive. It's those things that we all need to be cognizant of, and it's that pressure that comes down. So the emotional and psychological impact, right? So lack of emotions. We start to suppress them because of, again, societal expectations around masculinity, what it means to show up. I have an 11-year-old nephew who no longer smiles. And that hurts my heart. When he was 6, 7, 8, 9, he would be like, this is great. I can't wait to go to the park. And now he's been hanging out with his friends and he'll say, that's cool. That's awesome. Oh, you got McDonald's? Okay, cool. That's what's up. And I'm like, you can smile. He's like, I don't want to look soft. Well, let me tell you, society doesn't want you hard. But you can't be too soft either. That double consciousness. Okay? And then mentally over it, anxiety, stress, burnt out, fear of being seen as incompetent. Because again, the mental gymnastics, the work that you have to do, it's like, I am having anxiety. I don't even know if I should run into this encounter. How should I talk to them? What should I say? How do I phrase it? Will I be heard? And then a full resilience, right? The expectation of emotional and mental resilience despite systemic obstacles. And I wanted to put this in here because when it comes to people of color, especially our Black men, they always say, but you're so resilient. And I hate that word because I shouldn't have to be. I shouldn't have to be resilient in order to make it through. It's because society has these expectations that we have to navigate. So I want you to get with a pair. If you all can get with someone, we're only gonna take 5 minutes on this. Get with someone, find a partner. Feel free to move. You can do it now, that's fine. Okay, so I want you to answer one or two of these questions. Identify a time that you felt fraudulent. What did you attribute to that success? Which strengths of yours were you overlooking? What would you do differently? And how did you process it internally? So take some time. These are a lot of questions. We only have 5 minutes. But again, how we move through this is being reflective. Okay? So go for it.
All right. So we're going to head and come back. Maybe both parties didn't get a chance to share. Again, we're being cognizant of time because I'm going to leave for time for questions at the end. How did it feel just being able to talk about that?
We had a common experience of a person who basically was our mentor and who pushed us forward and was like our watchdog as administrators in education. So they kept us moving forward. And out of that, I learned, I didn't want to become an educator, but out of that, and an administrator, out of that, I learned that I love working with people.
Mm-hmm.
I love mentoring. I should have gone into counseling or social welfare or something because most of my job was contributed to me helping and working people
with people
who were having a difficulty at home, domestic problems,
yes,
as opposed to educational problems.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else?
So me and my partner here both have similar situations where we were promoted by our supervisors to positions maybe we weren't ready for. So we felt a little fraudulent holding that role, but we faked it till we made it, kind of a thing. And what would we have? What would I have done differently? Maybe I would have been more open. I'm talking like in my 20s, I was promoted to a really high role and I was supervising people triple my age and didn't know what I was talking about, but I sure did fake it. They had no idea. So, but I probably would have gotten more guidance of how to do the role more effectively rather than just faking it and, you know, learning as I go, but maybe would have reached out and gotten more help to be more successful sooner, you know?
Yeah, I have a question. Mm-hmm. So you were promoted by your supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
So the supervisor saw something, and I heard you say it was something that you weren't ready for.
Yes.
So what is it that the supervisor saw in you and not those people who were 3 times your age? I just want you, what did they see?
Well, I'm going to tie this into college because I was in a college program and it was an internship. And that internship turned into a job,
yes.
Which turned into another job, which turned into another job. And that same supervisor took me along to several, I lived in Las Vegas to get my degree. So I went to several casinos with the same supervisor and he just kept promoting me. Yeah. But that first promotion, I was like, you know, I'm expected to manage
these
300 people and I'm fresh out of college and, or still in college doing this, just fresh out of this internship. But yeah, he saw something in me. That's why one of the questions I asked is, do you feel lucky? Like, I do feel some of it was luck. I feel some of it was fate, meant to be kind of stuff. But also, he saw something in me that I presented that he wanted in that role.
Yeah.
And I probably didn't give myself enough credit at that time.
And I still want you to give yourself credit now. Because when I tell you, what I heard you say is, I was in school. So you're a learner. You have dedicated yourself to this craft. You're in school for at least 4 years, and now you're supervising 300 people. While in the moment, it may feel like, I got this out of luck. I'm gonna fake it till I make it. The reality of it was, and I'm just gonna put this out there, the most qualified at the time. And I want, and again, I know it's in the past, but I want you to take ownership of that because so much of it is us saying, I lucked out. They saw something in me. They were great. They were amazing. They kept moving me on. But what did I bring to the table that made them see it? And then I want you to tap into that and own it. But thank you for sharing. All right. So we're not going to do this today, but I want to introduce you to it. The idea of the emotional toll of code switching, which we talked about earlier. And again, code switching, adapting speech, behavior, appearance to fit dominant culture or workplace norms, often used as a strategy to avoid judgment or bias. And when we merge that with the imposter phenomenon, we get feeling the need to prove belonging. I need to prove that I belong here. So in order to prove that I belong here, I have to dress a certain way, I have to talk a certain way, I have to act a certain way. Switching reinforces internalized doubt. So when I'm in this space and I'm like, oh my gosh, you're amazing, this is awesome. And then I leave and I'm like, ugh, that's so fake, that's so phony. I can't believe I did that. They're gonna know that I'm lying. They're gonna know that that's not the real me. So that doubt comes up. Self-monitoring deepens feelings of inauthenticity. So when you continue to change it up and you monitor how you talk, how you show up, how you are in certain spaces, not living your truth, okay? Feelings of inauthenticity show up, and they're deep. And it takes that emotional toll that presents chronic stress, reduced sense of psychological safety, because, oh my gosh, if they find out, I don't know what's gonna happen, okay? And a heightened burnout risk due to emotional labor. And I really wanted to share this. My authentic self isn't acceptable here. And I would say that all the time. If I showed these people a glimpse of who I really was in this space, I would lose my job. So I can't show up that way. And that's really hard. So, reframing the phenomenon. We have to break the silence, which is what we did today. You got some pair share. You talked to each other about what you've experienced. Separate feelings from fact. What do I mean when I say separate feelings from fact? Yeah.
Well, I mean, in any situation, separate the feelings that it calls from the factual things that happened in the situation.
100%.
Whether it's an email, whether it's the tone, like you said, the tone of an email, where it's just like, oh, you read it a certain way, so that's coming from feelings, versus this is the fact of the email, this is what it said.
Correct. Yes. Hand over here. Oh, sorry. The mics are coming.
We need the onliners to hear us.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So, sound different. So, and I'm going to use an example, I guess. Like, say you receive an email from, like, a colleague. Say, hey, you need to pick it up a little bit, you know, because you're lacking in terms of quality or in terms of work. Some people can instantly use their emotions, like, oh, get mad or flustered. But it could be just correct, you know. Not a stigma, but like somebody just correcting you or looking out for you.
Right, providing you that feedback, yep. Right? That constructive feedback. But I say separating feelings from fact. I want to honor your feelings. Your feelings matter, but they're not fact. When we were walking out that door and you didn't hold it open for me, I thought in my head, racist. Now, is that a fact or is that my feeling and opinion? Feeling and opinion. The reality of it is maybe they didn't see me. How do I know that they didn't see me? Do I know that they're a racist? I've deduced, I felt that I was being targeted because they didn't hold that door. Let's honor the feeling, but let's operate off of facts. Hey, when I walked out the door, you didn't open it. What's up? What happened? Oh, I didn't see you. Okay, so those are the facts. Accentuate the positive. Highlight the positive. We focus on the negative so much. Highlight the positive. I'm going back when I shared I was on Deal or No Deal and I told you I had 797 messages of people who hate me and criticized me, but I didn't start screaming that I won $88,000. And then after taxes, 66. And then I paid for grad school and I was broke again. But we're not gonna talk about that. I didn't highlight that. I was so focused on how these people thought and how they saw me that I couldn't even enjoy the fact that I had just won a substantial amount of money for being on TV for 20 minutes. Develop a new script. So if you always tell yourself, I can't do this, I'm not good at this, I don't belong here, I want you to say, this is exactly where I need to be. I hear so many young people say, I should be married by now. I should have a girlfriend or boyfriend by now. I should have my dream job by now. Maybe we replace by now with for now. I'm single for now. I'm a student for now. Because when we say by now, there's an end date. For now, we're moving towards it. So I want you to challenge yourself in reframing the phenomenon. Because I used to say by now all the time, I should be a homeowner by now. I should do this by now. And then I created something called Happiness Destination. I'll just throw this in there. But Happiness Destination is I'm going to be happy when. So I said, I'm going to be happy when I lose weight. I lost 132 pounds. I gained it back, thank you. But I lost 132 pounds. I wasn't happy. But I attributed that to happiness. I got my dream job. I'm more stressed out than ever. I'm a homeowner. And when something breaks, I'm like, call the landlord. That's me. And so everything that I wished for and I had hoped for with these buy nows, I've now challenged myself to be like for now and no more happiness destination. Because I didn't even go to the gym. I said, I need to lose 40 pounds before I go to the gym. Now, does that make sense? No, but it's the stories we tell ourselves, okay? And then visualize success, reward yourself, okay? So if you did ace the test, got the job, ran that mile and whatever, get new shoes, grab a snack, do something, but reward yourself, okay? And stop asking for permission. That's the big piece. Because when we experience the imposter phenomenon, we get stuck and we want somebody else to validate our experiences for us. Stop asking and validate for yourself. And the action list, I really want you to take this, so if you have your phone, feel free to take a photo. If not, I'll make sure the slides get sent over. But I really want you to write a personal affirmation statement. And that really establishes a growth mindset. And so we talked about the imposter phenomenon saying, I can't make mistakes, I can't make mistakes, I can't do this. But a growth mindset says, I'm going to make mistakes and it's going to happen. And when you embrace the thought of making a mistake, you make less mistakes. But when you're afraid to make mistakes, you make them even more. Request personal and professional feedback. Write it down, good or bad. Ask people, hey, good, bad feedback. I want it all. And I want you to sit with it. I want you to hear it. Okay? And practice accepting it. Don't try to negate it. Okay? And practice saying thank you after receiving feedback and sit with it. And then set realistic, attainable expectations. And that goes back to the buy now. So I want my dream job tomorrow. Probably not going to happen tomorrow. But realistic is I'm working towards it. I'm giving myself 2 years, and this is what I'm going to do. So with the imposter phenomenon, it's not something we can cure. It's not the imposter syndrome. It's situational, and it's very fluid. And you will experience heightened imposter phenomenon characteristics in new situations, with new people, new things. But as you get comfortable, that lessens. So I challenge you to continue to talk about it, embrace you, and be gentle with you when it comes to the imposter phenomenon. Any questions?
Hey, hi. One quick question. So how do you deal with the stigmas of somebody you like just met, and how do you like cope with that situation?
Yeah. So what I heard is you just met someone and maybe they have preconceived notions about how you should behave. They've categorized that all people do this. First, accept the fact that you're in their life and it's probably a blessing that you're there because you're going to challenge it. But they also need to be open to it. And so I'm a firm believer in having the conversation. Have the conversation. So when you say all black people like rap and hip hop, what does that mean? Sit, listen, stop talking. They're going to start talking. When people get uncomfortable, what do? They start talking. Never fails. Perfect time to do it is when you're driving. You have somebody in the passenger seat. Hey, so when you said all black people are loud, what did that mean? 100%. Stereotyping, right? Maybe they will start, well, that's not what I mean. They start to backtrack. But if you realize that the stigma is bigger than you, then it could be the messages that they received. So you also want to say, but where does that come from? And just because those are the messages that you received, it doesn't mean that those are the messages that you believe. Right? But we are all a part of the cycle of socialization. Right? And so the messages that we receive, we as people, we fall guilty. We go right back into it. When I was little, my dad would say, boys don't wear pink. Boys don't cry. My nephew fell when he was 6, and I was like, get up, boys don't cry. And I said, oh my gosh, what did I say? I know better than that. But it's the messages, it's the cycle. That's what we do. Other questions? You're welcome.
I mean, actually, to build off of that, you know, how are you able to identify in a situation where you're dealing with another individual's stigma, you know, stereotypes, or, you know, understanding that we all kind of deal with imposter syndrome from here time to time. But how do you learn to identify when it's not your problem, when it's time for you to
gracefully bow out?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you've had the conversation, you've asked the questions. I always say, now that I'm older, when I was younger, I felt that it was my job to teach. I felt it was also my job to, I'm gonna teach the revolution. I'm older now. Google is free. Thank you for your time. And I bow out gracefully. So what I'm saying to you is, I want you to ask yourself, is investing in this relationship going to be worth it for me? And what happens is we as people want to change your mind. I want to change your mind. What is changing their mind going to do? Who are these people to you? Now, if it's a family member, someone significant, someone whatever, then maybe you sit with it and you continue to ride with it. But if you understand that this person is deep-seated at their core and they believe X, Y, and Z, say we can respectfully disagree. And then that's when you go ahead and bow out, right? I will say something that my grandma used to tell me. She's like, you don't have to attend every fight you're invited to. And so I've noticed that as a black man, I would go into spaces and people would say certain things to me to get a reaction from me. And when I did not react, they were left looking crazy because I didn't have to attend that party. I didn't have to attend that fight. So I would say to you, when you start to recognize that maybe you've had 4 or 5 conversations and it's going nowhere from there, look at what the relationship means to you, and maybe you continue to invest, and then maybe you say, you know what, I don't have to attend this fight. Hopefully that answered your question. Yeah. Yes.
Teenagers? Does it apply to our teenagers who seem to be consumed with being imposters on many, many different levels? They want to be like everybody else and they never show their own truth.
Yeah.
So the question is, how do you mentor young people to help them to understand that they are important and they don't have to be like everybody else?
Yeah. First is, so yes. And so in my dissertation, I worked with a lot of 17, 18-year-olds, and then imposter phenomenon spewed from social media. And it was looking at, you got the new car, you got the new job, you have the body that I want, and I wish I could wear that dress or fit those jeans, and I want this. The first thing is I tell them, stop scrolling. Stop scrolling on TikTok. Stop scrolling on Instagram. And really start to narrate, curate their own lives, right? Because they're living vicariously through other people. Oh my gosh, I can't believe they did that. I can tell you so many young people now, when I ask them, what do they want to be? A lot of them say what? Social media influencers. And that is, and so what I tell them is, well, I need you to tap into you and stop looking and comparing to the other person. And when I have them turn that mirror around on themselves and they're looking at themselves and narrating their own stories, you would be surprised what I've seen. And so ultimately, that's a big question that I don't have the answer to, but I can say some of the work that I've done is around self-reflection, around journaling, around taking breaks from social media. I don't believe that they should be inundated 24 hours, 7 days a week. It was beautiful that I grew up in a time where there was no social media because I was in the streets. And now I'm no longer in the streets, but if I was, it would now be documented. So that's what, but when I was younger, nothing was documented. That was great. And now everything is documented, recorded, photo, what have you. And so it lives on, and also being cognizant and having the conversation with young people about what you do today is going to follow you because everything is documented. All right, well, I'll stick around. Yes, no problem. I'll stick around. More than willing to talk to you all. I want to thank you. There will be a form coming around for you all to take. Most likely just email it to you so they can have it. But it's homework, around code switching and emotional toll and doing some work and reflection around that and how that shows up for you.
Right. Let's give Dr. I'm having a brain fart. Blackman, a round of applause. I was going to say Willie. Dr. Willie! Thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate this conversation, and we hope to continue it in your various spaces that you engage in across the college. Students, staff, employees of all kinds. Thank you.